Good evening. We appreciate being back out this evening. And I do appreciate the call to come out and to talk to you all. It is a good thing to keep up with what has been done. And I do appreciate the reading again from Ephesians 5, where it asks us to be wise with our time and wise with what we do. And that is really what it is that we're doing right now, as we are assessing the time that we spend and where our energies are spent. And I do want to go ahead and say, and I think you all would know this, but it is worth being said on a regular basis because there is so much confusion about this in the world, that your support of me is not a direct support of the church in Andalusia. Now, I'm going to be talking a lot about the church down that way and my work with them, but your support is a support of me. In the Scriptures, we don't find examples of churches supporting the work of other churches. Every church is responsible for its own work. But as far as your support of me goes, that is clearly seen throughout the Scriptures, and that is what the relationship we have is, and I do appreciate that. My family does, and it is a great blessing that we have to not only be down there, but to have the support of congregations like you who put your trust in us. And so I hope to at least describe in some measure what we have been doing, and hopefully we can request prayers from you all that our work would go well. And I would request for any and all pointers so that I can know how to do this type of task in a better way, in a way that would lead souls to God and would glorify Him. And then hopefully I can instill some encouraging thoughts in you all so that you all can better do your work here as well. So the Lord's work in Andalusia. Now, Andalusia is, if you don't know, it's in southern Alabama, roughly 30 minutes or so from the border. A significant number of our members actually live right on the border between Florida and Alabama. And that city is called Florala, kind of the combination of both those. So we are pretty close to the border. In fact, Nathan, our youngest, was born about 5 minutes from the border on the side of the road on our way to Florida to try and get born. So we are right close to the border, and we know that border and have driven that one many times. But it doesn't mean that the gospel doesn't need to go there, right? It was something my father had told me when I was in college and looking for opportunities, perhaps even thinking about foreign evangelism and going to places, you know, in the remotest parts of even America where there are no churches. And he reminded me, he said, there's nowhere you're going to go, nowhere you're going to go that doesn't need the gospel. And so it doesn't matter where you end up, you're going to be preaching the gospel. There are going to be souls that need to be saved. Now, this particular town is, you know, a relatively small town, and it has its own set of challenges and its own set of blessings. So part of what I want to do is describe to you what the challenges and the blessings of this particular location and work is. The church that meets in Andalusia, normally I'll always like to go bullet by bullet, but when it's all up there, you know, don't read ahead, spoilers. Now, we'll get to all of it anyway. So we are about 30 to 40, and I have reminded many people of that even today, and that's a good question to have. We want to know how work like that is going. So 30 to 40 is the average just attendance. But we'll get to a second talking really about that number in a little bit more detail, perhaps. The large group of that is middle-aged, working, and then retired. So we've got a lot of people, and essentially no young people. My family represents just about the only demographic in our age bracket and family age. There is one other family with a younger child who's about 8 years old. But this has long been a missing part of this particular congregation. The other youngest members there are you know, in their teens looking to graduate from high school in another year or two. So it's been a long time that they've gone without the younger ages, and I do see them wanting to spoil our kids. And, you know, it's something that really blesses them. We do meet once for worship and twice for study every week. So once for worship on Sunday mornings, twice for study once on Sunday morning and once on Wednesday night. Our members are spread out a decent decent ways. Our furthest members come from closer to the interstate, 65, so they drive about 45 minutes into town. We do have some members down in Floral, which is about a 35-minute drive up. So, you know, we're spread around a good bit. And that does come into play whenever you're wanting to orchestrate work on a weekly basis, because it means that you're not necessarily going to be able to reach out to all your membership pool just at a drop of the hat. You know, so most of the time, these members who are also themselves aged are not able to just at any point in the day and just at any time, you know, drop what they're doing and come and do something special. So when we do orchestrate extra studies and things like that, I have to keep that in mind. I'm going to expect that, that group that can actually do the hard work is going to be a little bit smaller, a little bit closer to town, etc. All right, so I want to describe some of the positive points that I have seen while I've been there. We've been there for about 2.5 years now. So we moved down there, the October of 16 now. So these are some good things that I have seen with this particular work. I have seen the attributes of peace expected in Romans chapter 12 and verse 18, where he says, as far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. And I have seen examples of our brethren going out of their way to be at peace, not just with one another, but with those outside as well. And I do think that's the emphasis Paul has, that whoever it is, you're going to seek to be at peace, because that itself is going to be part of your walk with the Lord and showing people, like Jesus said, the love for each other is going to be a proof that He is our God. And I have seen that while we are there. And that is a positive attribute that I have been encouraged by. And looking at these relationships strengthens me and helps me in my walk. We do have an extremely loving foundation. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 22 sometimes gets overlooked. Go ahead and turn there if you would. The end of the chapter is probably pretty familiar to us when we say, all flesh is like grass, and the glory of the flower of the grass. It fades away, but the word of the Lord endures forever. Well, if we back up a few verses to verse 22... says, since you have, in obedience to the truth, purified your souls for a specific purpose. We do good to notice that we have to obey the truth. We do good to know that we have to purify our souls. But I think sometimes we miss the purpose of these things. Why do we obey? Why do we purify our souls? It is for the sincere love of the brethren. Fervently then, love one another from the heart. This is a mode of life that Paul, that Peter is expecting of every church. That this letter even is not addressed to any one particular church. This is all saints. All saints should be purifying their hearts from evils, getting rid of those evils, so that they can have a place for the brethren. It reminds me of, let's say, 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and 7, where the end of chapter 6, Paul is arguing that we ought not be attached too much to this world, right, and to those in the world. And rather, in the beginning of for a few verses of 2 Corinthians 7, he says, make room for us, rather. That by getting rid of some of that evil influence in your life, you make room then to bring in fellow saints and brethren and surround yourself with those types of people. And I have seen a good series of examples of that happening even down here or down there in Andalusia. And we do have a desire for the Word, and for the Word only. This is something that has long been stated in, you know, I don't know what you would call it, maybe their charter or whatever it is, but this is something that they've had in print ever since they've been around, that we seek to modify ourselves to the Word only. And that is a principle that is easily established, say, from 1 Corinthians chapter 3, which reminds all of us again to take care how we are building what we are building. Now, I think Paul is warning preachers who are coming into a place, so this would be certainly applicable to me as I'm coming in to a place, to make sure to be careful how you build. So he's just talked about, let's say, Apollos' work and his work, and reminding them that there might be some other teachers out there that have to be careful how they're going to start working with a particular group. And he reminds us 1 Corinthians 3, starting in verse 10, he says, "According to the grace of God, which was given to me, like a wise master builder, I laid a foundation, and another is building on it. But each man must be careful how he builds on it." So, as far as my application, I'm certainly not one who founded this work, but I am like Apollos in that I keep building upon it. And he says, "For no man can lay a foundation other than that which was laid, which is Christ Jesus." And so, from my standpoint, it is not my job to try to lay new foundations or anything like that. My job is to expand upon what Paul has already given us, the foundation of Jesus Christ. In verse 12, he says, "Now if any man builds on the foundation with, I don't know, gold or silver, precious stones, wood, hay, or straw, then each man's work will become evident, for the day will show it, because it is to be revealed in fire. And the fire itself will test the quality of each man's work." So one of the pertinent points for me is I got to be careful not to try and think that, well, the work at Andalusia is just going to be absolved or fixed by these material external processes. Well, this is where we need to put our money, or this is what we want things to look like. This is what we want our promotional materials to look like. And we start making it all about the materials and the money. And Paul says, that's not the foundation. That's not how you build a church. That's this paper product is going to be burned up. And he says, when that trial comes, or when the day comes, which could very well be referring to the day of judgment, in the final time, each man's work will be evaluated based on that fire. And now this could also be referring to just the trials that the church may very well go through. And if a church has been established based on just a good look, they have a good logo and they have a nice sounding preacher and a great looking auditorium, if that's what draws people in, what's going to happen when the trials come, when the persecutions come? Well, people are just going to dissipate and run off. So Paul is reminding us to make sure we build properly on the word. He says in verse 14, "If any man's work which he has built on remains, then he receives that reward." So that is a reward which I certainly am seeking, to build upon the foundation of Christ and hopefully see the proper yielding that Christ will bring about. Well, for the brethren know this, and the brethren fully understand this, and I am grateful that there's no need to redraw lines of foundation. No, their foundations are solidly set on Jesus Christ. And they've been professing that far before I arrived. We have a reputation for the word only in our community. I'm going to mention our community in just a bit, but there's hardly anybody I've talked to in that area who's been around for any length of time who doesn't know the church here and who doesn't know the stand that they take for the word only. Now, we can talk about that in several ways. Some people are going to look at that, they're going to look down on that, say, oh, you guys are just being overly restrictive. You can talk about that as far as conservatism, whatever words you want to use. We have a reputation for words only, for the word of Christ only, and not basing this foundation anywhere else. It reminds me again of 1 Thessalonians 1, verses 7 through 8, where he praises the Thessalonians for letting the word of the Lord sound forth from them to the point where he didn't even have to tell anybody about that church because everybody already knew the church at Thessalonica. And I am grateful, as Paul is, that just about everyone I talk to in that vicinity, they know the church at Stanley Avenue. And they have that reputation. Whether people agree with it or not is another thing, but they are well known for their striving for being followers of Christ in this way. Well, that's the work there, but let me tell you a little bit about my work, and I say this is the work that has been requested of me. This is the work that I do for the church. So when I came in, they asked me to do these processes and work, and this is the work that they support, which is the teaching of the classes, the sermons. And so before I came down, even a couple of members from up here would help come down and to help facilitate this process. And so to lift that burden off of their shoulders is a great blessing for them, and I'm happy to do so. And this is one of the things that draws me, again, to the work, but also to... they asked me to go ahead and organize the classes. I remember that we had been so many years without any children's classes, so that I had the opportunity to work with their teachers to help rebuild a curriculum set and to have standards there and to know what we're seeking to accomplish was a great thing for them. They went ahead and turned over the opportunities for meetings, to host meetings from other places. They wanted me to go ahead and head that up. which I am pleased to do. So this incorporates as well any time that I'm out of town, that we'll get somebody to come in for them. I am pleased to say that they do desire to have this regular meeting opportunities. And that, in fact, last year we had one meeting, and then this year they requested two meetings for the year. They do have a desire to bring people in and to extend opportunities for their community to hear the word. Then they asked me to be accessible and to create some form of accessibility, so a way in which people can keep touch with the church and know who we are, find us, etc. So this is the type of thing that most churches are going to have going for them, so I just helped facilitate that process. They were doing this type of work before I got there, but this takes a load off of some of their shoulders. But this is not necessarily the type of work that I would say, you know, is necessarily being supported by other places. This is the work that, you know, they need done and they support. So the work that I perform for the sake of, let's say, other supporting churches, what I want to consider is, like we said in Hebrews chapter 10, how do I stimulate others to love and good works? This is a essential a fundamental of mine that I have to consider. How am I going to help stimulate other people to doing what they need to do, to love and to good deeds? And so I've thought about this, and I'm happy to change things up, and I have just kind of seek out what works, and if something doesn't work, you change it to something else. You find whatever it is that works. So what I'm doing right now is I'm dedicating some extra time for Bible studies. For example, 1 Timothy chapter 4 and 13 tells us to, until Paul comes to touch base with Timothy, he says, in verse 13, he says, until I come, give attention to the reading, to exhortation, and to teaching. So this is something that I'm trying to do. And I'm trying to do it beyond just on Sundays. I think it is important, as we see the pattern. When I first moved there, I preached a lesson from Acts chapter 2, where we saw the church beginning that work. They dedicated themselves to four things. They dedicated themselves to the apostles' teachings. They dedicated themselves to fellowship. They dedicated themselves to the breaking of bread. And they dedicated themselves to prayer. That's what every solid church goal is. That is that from Acts chapter 2 and verse 42. And so that is one of the goals that I have. So dedicate ourselves and our time to reading the scriptures, to exhorting them day to day, and not just just once a week. So I try to offer public opportunities. And I change up the locations. I try to make it accessible. Sometimes people are going to feel a little bit more intimidated if they have to enter inside of a church building, and so I just want to alleviate any stumbling blocks. So I'll have these types of studies outside. I'll have them in my home. I'll have them at the Dairy Queen. I'll have them at the coffee shop, wherever it is that we may find people. Just an opportunity to read the Word. We have opportunities to have devotionals, to study, prayer sessions, whatever it may be, just to get us back to the Word. I do make myself available for all times, and this is something that I have chosen to do, something that my wife and I, we work on together, because as you may know, a normal job, you're gonna go into work, and you're going to go home, and you're going to have your home life and your work life, but that's not the case for a preacher and for a preacher's family. We have to make ourselves available at any and all times, because should anyone ask, should anybody need or desire to know Christ better, I've made it my priority to make sure that others can know Christ better. And I don't want any possibility that on the final judgment somebody could say, I was this close to coming to Jesus, but one person turned me down one too many times. I don't want to be that guy that turns somebody down. So make myself available at any and all times. And that reminds me again of what Paul asked Timothy to do. You'll notice these are all from Timothy and Titus as young evangelists themselves who were beginning this work, and Paul is kind of handing the baton over to them. 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 2, he says, "Preach the word and be ready in all seasons." He's not just talking about a calendar year, be ready in winter and be ready in summer. No, he's just saying be ready at any opportunity. Whatever age or wherever you're at, be ready. It says, "Reprove, rebuke, exhort with great patience and instruction." So making myself available and ready to do this work. I also dedicate a good bit of my time to studying and then writing creating study material. Last week, I shared even with my updates some of the progress and some of the work I'm doing. I do have a website in which I host some of these workbooks, and there's at least one more to put up there that I went ahead and took the time to go ahead and write out for our work. Not because anybody else's workbooks wouldn't do, but because I feel like it helps me understand the Word better. It helps me explain it better. And perhaps there are different things that we can say that might trigger other people's hearts in a new fashion. Titus chapter 2 and verse 1 says, "As for you, speak the things which are fitting for sound doctrine." What he's telling Titus is not just recite and regurgitate everything that I've told you. What he's telling Timothy here is that you have a responsibility to present sound doctrine in whatever words people can understand. And so Titus was tasked with this responsibility now of, in a sense, presenting the gospel in his own words. And I think that this is a good work, for especially for preachers to do. But not just preachers. I would highly suggest, any one of you to be able to present the gospel in your own words. Now, there can be any number of study materials and tools to help you with that process. Not every one of us are able to just off the top of our head spout out information, and sometimes we have to be reminded about what to say and maybe when to say it, etc. But insofar as you can, consider your own walk with Christ and ask yourself, why am I even a Christian? And ask yourself, as Peter suggested that you ought to in 1 Peter chapter 3, are you ready to give the defense for the hope that is within you? Are you ready? If you're at the grocery store, if you're at work, or if you're at school, and somebody asks you, hey, what do you think about Jesus? Or why are you a Christian? Or where do you worship? Oh, you worship over there. Don't you guys believe this or believe that? What's the difference anyways? Do you know what you even believe? And if you believe in Christ, and you know enough scriptures to become a Christian, are you ready and able to at least tell people that in your own words? Or do you have to rely upon the words of others? Because I will tell you that most people who are met with I need to go consult my website, or I need to go consult my pamphlet or my handout, and I'll read you what I believe, that doesn't come across very sincere. It doesn't come across as a genuine faith, or a faith that Paul said, make your faith your own in a particular sense. Now, yes, study tools are fine. And if you need that, that's just fine. But make it your goal to try and explain the gospel, or in this case, back in Titus 2, verse 1, sound doctrine, even in your own words when possible. So then I also spend some time writing, of course, you know, booklets. So this last year I've been dedicating myself to writing out some of my thoughts, for example, on song singing. So Lord willing, in proper time, I want to have a workbook out, or a class book rather, out on the hymn singing. Also been dedicating my time, again, as I mentioned this morning, to genealogy. So I would also like to have a congregational setting type workbook on genealogy. So you might not think it's that interesting, but I think it is absolutely not only interesting but beneficial, given that two of the Gospels base their primary apologetic about the messianic nature of Jesus upon genealogies. I think it's certainly applicable. I do go ahead and write articles, and you might be familiar even with my father's work. He preaches in Vestavia Hills, but he and I work together in some of our dealings and some of the websites that we do, and we'll share articles, and we'll share each other's and post our own. And so if you want to know any of that material, I'd be happy to share those sites with you. Videos, sometimes I'll get a little bit behind, but I do like to preach some of the lessons, some of the thoughts that I'm working on, and rewrap them as videos, and I'll put those up on our church website as well. I do have a website that I began years ago, but still keep it up, that I do end up getting a couple hundred hits a month, trying to present the gospel. And so I have a host of videos and articles and explanations about the gospel on there. Those are types of avenues that I want to keep open for anybody who may have need of them. And then also, this is a separate bullet point that I put up, learning the scriptures for myself. when I made the transition from being a part-time preacher to a full-time preacher, and my work at Andalusia here is now my first full-time work. Before then, I was living in Birmingham. I would drive to Tuscaloosa to do some preaching, and I did that for about a year. So I would work full-time and then drive down on the weekends. And one of the things that really, bothered me about that situation, I didn't feel like I could put the time I needed to studying the Scriptures, to really get my head wrapped around what's being presented. I did a good enough job teaching classes and preaching sermons, but I didn't feel like I was really excelling the way I needed to. And so the opportunity that I began to look for was the opportunity to dedicate myself to really know the Scriptures, to have time to read them, to study them, to cross-reference them, to be able to tie all the dots and together. And that's something that I have been able, through, again, your good blessings, to have the time to be able to do. Now, if it came down to it, and I didn't have the resources I need to dedicate myself to it, be like Paul, and I'll be a tent maker, and I'll do whatever I need to provide and to still do my preaching work. And so certainly my dedication to the Word and to preaching and all that is not dependent upon where I get the money from. However, it is a great blessing that churches like this and Christians like you, fellow saints, share with me in this work. And this greatly benefits me and helps me understand the Scriptures. And hopefully, my prayer is, helps me then reach out to those that are listening, finding those who are willing to listen and able to come to the Lord. I want to talk about some of the strengths of the work. And in this strength list, I don't just mean to say the church itself, but we're talking about the community and my place in that. One of the strengths is the love and the peace of the congregation. That is a great blessing. If anybody has been in a struggling church that struggles with peace or struggles with getting along with each other, it's very difficult to continue in the work that God has called you to do when time is wasted bickering and biting and devouring one another, as Paul mentions in Galatians 5. So we are blessed with love and peace. Not to say that no issues will arise or no issues have ever arisen. But at this point in time, we are at peace, and we have people who have been able to work things out and know how to do that. We have people who will listen. People who, yes, are themselves wise and students of the Bible, whom I have seen. There are people there smarter than I am who are simply willing to sit down and listen. And that is a great blessing. And that is an attitude seeking out peace, the peace that will aid any work. There are great connections, and there is a network of contacts, the brethren that are there. In a small town, as you would expect, and I didn't mention the size, but the town or community is about 9,000 in the official city, and then there's all sorts of outlying districts and areas. But the city itself is relatively small. It's mostly residential, a lot of neighborhoods and families and things like that. But what that means is most of the people in our church, they know pretty much anybody, right? Most of the time, I'll see somebody, whether it be a shop owner or somebody else around town, and one of our church members will know them, or they'll know one of our church members, or I'll mention Stanley Adams. Say, "Oh yeah, I grew up with the guy that goes over there." So there's a large contact network, and I think that is a strength. I think that's a potential opportunity list. One of the other strengths is the flexibility that a small town like this provides. People aren't a slave to their schedule. This was a bit of a difference, again, between moving from Birmingham down to this way. It's not that I've never been around, small or big towns before. I've lived in both small and big towns before. But again, you go from a very busy environment, let's say like Birmingham, where, everybody's on the go and going somewhere, to a town like Andalusia, where it's just much more relaxed. And so people are much more willing to just slow down and maybe have a conversation with you. And that is a bit of a strength. But also the Christians at the congregation are very flexible with what they're willing to either let me do or flexible with everything. And that, again, aids the peace that they have. Nobody there is just overly adamant about anything. And to be honest, that's just the whole community. That's the way this community works. But it doesn't come without struggles either. some of the struggles there are the age and capability. And again, this is community-wide. It is a generally older community. There are not that many industries bringing new people or new families in. Most people that are there have lived there their whole lives or have grown up there, moved off, and decided, you know what, I miss home, so they'll come back home. Not a whole lot of newcomers. In fact, when I first moved there, and I would tell people that I was from out of town, that me and my family had moved there, there were multiple people, I can remember at least three or four occasions, independently, where people would boil it down to two things. So, are you with the military or are you preaching somewhere? Now, those are about the only two options people could see of why you would come to Andalusia. But that is a drawback in some cases, because as people age, it means that, especially, let's say, in our church, there are very few people that can pick up that mantle to keep things going. And so as the aged leave their capabilities and what they can do, it is up to the next generation. And without that next generation, a church simply cannot continue in its location. So that is something that I see as a struggle, especially long term. We will have to work very hard to be able to keep going on that work. But also, it's going to affect the work itself. You know, whenever I host Bible studies or I want to have extra get-togethers or singings or whatever the case may be, our group is simply limited. And when they're able to get out, how far they're able to go, and what they're able to do when they do get out. So that does limit a lot of the potential types of things that we could be doing. One of the things also, and this is a struggle that is not new or not specific just to Andalusia, but a general attitude of apathy. I'm not necessarily comforted by this. It is a concern wherever you go, but I don't know if there's been a preacher yet who has said to me, my church does not struggle at all with apathy. Most places recognize that there are going to be some people, whether it be a minority or majority in a congregation, that is going to struggle with apathy. And what we mean by that is people who are Christians, people who know the right thing to do, they know the scriptures, but they really show no interest in growing. They show no interest in studying outside of, let's say, you know, the Sunday context, or they show really little interest in taking where they're at and becoming better for it and associating with the brethren and making efforts to be with one another. And, you know, that's a struggle probably just about wherever you go, and some places do very well in kind of warding off the apathy. But this location is, again, the community is very much like this. And yes, that does infiltrate the church environment also. Our core membership is right around 20 or so. And then we've got about an additional 20 of our members who are counted as members who make very little efforts. Whether, you know, some of them it is age and capability. Others, there is just simply no desire to be with one another or to come to Bible study. No desire to read the Bible. Even though they live, you know, a short distance away, there's still no real desire to grow. And that is a struggle. It's a struggle of the work. It's a struggle to any evangelist to see that. But it is also one of those things, you know, one of the phrases we sometimes use is challenge accepted, right? Wherein you see a challenge, you see, well, that's something that we can work with to grow. And what it does is at least gives a tangible metric that you can say, let's take that and let's see what we can do with it. One of the other struggles that we face, not from a, you know, within the church perspective, but outside the local perspective, is the local denominationalism. This is very, very prominent down this way. There are very, very few churches who hold to the types of basic word-only premises that you and I would hold to. There are a few, and every now and then I'll still hear about one that I haven't yet heard of, maybe just out in the boonies somewhere. But for the most part, the ones that you hear about, and the ones that you drive down the street and see, and the ones that most people are going to claim to be in, are going to be the heavily denominational types of groups. There's been very few people that I've met that haven't identified themselves with one of these types of groups. And they're all of them about the same. I, you know, just about wherever you go, whether it be in the nation or in the world, there's going to be, I don't know, different types of ways in which this works. But down in Andalusia, most churches look about the same. Like, if I was to put a blindfold on and just walk in somewhere and just, you know, listen to a service or participate in an activity or whatever, I don't think I could tell the difference between any place that I go within any of these denominations. They're pretty much saying the same things. They're guided by the community concept, where we're just here to assist each other and to help each other. We're here to feed each other, and that's what the purpose of the church is. And that is a struggle, because when you go up to somebody and say, "Hey, have you heard about Jesus?" "Yeah, I go to the First Baptist Church down here or there, and we're having a big sale, you know, and things like that." It's very difficult to take that relationship a whole lot further. And what you have to do is you have to plant yourself in an area to get to know them better. And so while before I said that the contact network is a blessing, I do also put it on the struggles here. Because what a small community like that means is you have to get to know people on an individual level before you can really take any conversations further. Very few people are willing to just instantly drop what they're doing and then visit with your church. Why? Because they're already going to church somewhere else. Or they're the apathetic type that just says, "Well, I go to church maybe once or twice a year, so why should I make an exception for you?" It's very difficult to take those relationships further because there are only so many contacts there. While we say, yes, it is a blessing and it is neat to be part of a small town, but once you exhaust that 9,000, you know, network of people, there's really nobody else to pull from. And one of the struggles down there is not that that our members and our membership over the last 50 or plus years that this church has been around, not that they haven't been doing their job and taking the message of the gospel to their local contacts in their community, but that they have. And the problem they now face is there's nobody left to talk to. Most of the members there have exhausted their personal contacts. And they're just basically standing by, waiting, keeping up, you know, chiming in every now and then. I have some very good, positive role model examples down here that people who make it an active effort to go ahead and remind people about the truth and what they believe at proper moments, and they're graceful about that. But this is a struggle, because what it means is we're just waiting for somebody's heart to be opened and to be turned. Now, there may be some new contacts out there, and we want to constantly be looking for those opportunities. But by and large, we're simply waiting for somebody to open their heart to understand the Word, and we want to be there when that time comes. So it is a struggle, because we wish we could do more, right? I wish I could do more. But in a community like this, there is only so much you can do. And so what you do is you dedicate yourself to understand the Word. You dedicate yourself to pray for the opportunities, pray for hearts to be turned. And that is where you all can come in. You all can pray for those opportunities. Pray for people's hearts to be opened up and willing to seek out a better way of understanding Jesus and the Bible. Turn over with me to Luke chapter 8. Probably heard this before, but when a preacher asks to turn to a passage and all the pages start turning, probably another 50 years that blessing is going to recede when everybody's just on their personal devices getting there, and it's just going to be a little bit more silent, but it is kind of neat to hear that. In Luke chapter 8, verses 5 through 8, "Sower went out to sow his seed, and when he sowed, some fell on the road, was trampled underfoot, the birds of the air ate it up. Other seed fell in the rocky soil, and as soon as it grew up, it withered away because it had no moisture. Other seeds fell in the thorns, and the thorns grew up with it, choked it out. Other seed fell into good soil, and it grew, and produced a crop 100 times as great." And he called out to those who were there, "Whoever has ears to hear, let him hear." I want to talk about those four soils just for a second. And I want to mention these four soils as different types of soils that I have seen down there in Andalusia, and types of soils that I believe, if you were to look around in your community and within this church, you're going to see these same soils represented as well. Jesus knew what he was doing when he boiled all these types of soils down to these four basic ones. And I'm just going to use substitute names, not to draw anybody out, because I don't think that's my job or task. So I use these names just as representative names of, you know, people in mind that I have experiences with. So, for instance, we've got the Steve. The Steve whom I've met, you know, just asking him, hey, you know, what do you think? And they say, well, I don't actually believe in a God. I mean, my wife believes in a God, and, you know, we've got some Bibles at home, and they've told me that, there's this or that Bible over here or there that I'm certainly able to understand, but I really can't. And there's not really much interest in going any further. Well, that's the first soil, isn't it? It's the type of person that, okay, they hear an opportunity, and they've even got contacts who have told them about where to start. But when it comes down to it, they're just not interested. They're just not willing. They've got other places to be, other things to do, and they're happy wherever they are, and they don't even know what they're missing out on. And this type of soil certainly exists. And I've run across them. I'm sure you've run across them too. And so one of the points I think Jesus is drawing out here is don't be discouraged when you run across these types of people. They exist, and just realize that it's going to happen. And your job, if you are a sower, your job is to keep on sowing no matter what. There's the Pete. We had a neighbor who I'll call Pete, who you know, had his own, you know, church that he would go to, and he was on the apathetic side. I remember we had a conversation about just again reminding him what we believe, and I told him that we believe that God is in full control of everything. He has all authority. He has all authority over the church, and so if he tells us to do something, that's what we do. If he doesn't tell us to do anything, we don't do it. And he told me, "You're crazy." Those are the words he used. "You're crazy. How can you think this way? If you don't feed people, you're never going to get people to come to your church." That was what he said. "You got to give people food." It was his approach. "You're crazy." And then he also chastised us for being so regulatory and specific about what we teach and how we worship. Because only people that are so degraded in their own minds would need those regulations, right? But we're free, you know, people like him, of course, you know, he's enlightened, and he's truthful and loving, and so he doesn't need those regulations to tie him down. Well, he's a guy who professes God, and says he knows God, but is really showing that his roots don't go very deep at all, and there was a point in time in which one of his own children was doing drugs out in his backyard, and he had to call the cops on him. Took his own son out to jail, and he came and he was gonna go ahead and leave the neighborhood. And he came and he told me, "You know, I kind of wish my son had gone to church where you're at, because I can now see a value in restriction. I can now see a value in holding yourself only to what God has prescribed." Now, he wasn't yet willing to take that any further. But he was willing to progress from the "you're crazy" to "I now see wisdom in it." Pray for Pete that he will continue that path to become one of these better soils. Then there's Susan. Susan is somebody who believes the gospel, you know, somebody who's a Christian. And again, we're not gender specific here, but Susan is somebody who's a Christian who knows God. But to be honest, there are more important things. There are other things that occupy their time. When it comes down to it, you know, whether it's taking an extra hour of sleep on Sunday morning, or attending a local function that they would rather go to, or just having a little bit more me time, they're going to pick the me time over being with the brethren and the saints. And this is very akin to that third soil. Now, I'm not sitting here to pass judgment on the Susans in this capacity, but I will say that there is a strict warning that Jesus himself gives about being distracted, even when you know what's right and you've had that seed and planted and you begin to grow. This is somebody who's accepted the word. This is somebody who's beginning to grow, and yet those cares, the concerns, the distractions, they're in their mind, the more important things eventually thin them out and dry them out. Pray for the Susans, that they would renew their strength, renew their interests back into the Lord. And then there are the Janes. Jane is somebody who has placed themselves fully into Christ, and everything they do is for Him. Their life, they can say, my life is the Lord. And we have the Janes down here as well. People who I look up to. People that encourage me. People who have placed themselves fully into knowing the Scriptures, to reminding other people about the Scriptures, to the people that every time they get an opportunity, they're always going to be saying good things about other people. Never, ever a bad word about anybody. Always reminding people of the Scriptures. There are certain people like James here who not a conversation goes by where not a Scripture is mentioned from them. These are people who love the Lord and make sure to try and build others up. And these are the people who are producing a crop a hundredfold. Now, I mentioned before one of the difficulties, struggles that we would have in a community like this is we simply can't see these types of results on the exterior. But you know, the types of produce that Jesus mentions in these in this parable, the types of produce that He's mentioning is a personal produce, is it not? This is something that is coming from the seed that itself was planted. And so this type of increase that Jesus is looking for is not measured by how many Christians you convert. It's not measured by how many people you can bring to church. That's not the sheaves. Those are not the produce that Jesus is talking about here. The produce Jesus is talking about is the own growth of their heart. The growth that their heart is able to give. And for a reminder of that, just look at the end of Galatians 5. The fruit of the Spirit, that is the harvest that God is looking for. The love that you display, the joy that you display, the patience you exhibit. Those are the types of things that the Lord is looking for in your heart. And yes, we have bits of each of those soils. And so I want to remind you this evening, if you want to get your songbooks out, the reminder for you this evening is not for you to just look around at other people and say, well, look at this person. They appear to be this kind of a soil. And look at that person. They appear to be that kind of a soil. And the application is not only for you to be the sower here. My application is what I believe Jesus' application was of the original parable, which is to ask the question, which soil am I going to be? That's the question. And that's the question of this parable. Which soil am I going to be? Because you get to pick. You get to pick which soil you're going to end up being. Jesus says, remember in verse 8, after He'd said it, He said, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. You have an opportunity right now to choose to be one of these soils. May I exhort you to be the Jane, to be the one who has placed themselves fully in God's Word, to place themselves fully in His authority, to do everything you do to build up the saints and to excel in the fruit of the Spirit, again mentioned at the end of Galatians 5. But if you have not given Jesus a second thought, if you're any of these other three soils out there, I encourage you, make Jesus the foundation for everything you do. And He will yield a produce within you that is valuable to Him. Others may not be able to see it, but the Lord will. And when He sees it, and when He comes for that harvest, He will count you worthy if you dedicate yourself for Him. And He will gather you to Himself so that you can be with Him forever. If we can exhort you to dedicate yourself to Christ tonight, let us know how we can help as we stand and sing.